Okay, there we go. Hi, this is Gary Darwin for the Magic Word Podcast.
Yeah.
Just say that.
This is Gary Darwin for the Magic
Word Podcast.
Word Podcast.
Yeah, the Magic Word, you know, because these are words.
I know.
Magic Word.
Magic Word Podcast. What the hell is a podcast? See, that's how behind I am.
Okay. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This podcast is brought to you by the Great American Magic Company, serving magicians worldwide with a world full of magic. And I also want to thank the Friends of the Magic Word who have made this podcast possible through their financial contributions, because the Las Vegas Chronicles took a lot of time, money, and effort on my behalf in order to get out to Las Vegas. And so thank you guys for your financial support, so that way it helped to defray my costs for my transportation and lodging and meals while I was out there. And also I want to thank all of the guys who were part of this Las Vegas Chronicles, who opened their homes and backstages and into their dressing rooms and different places where we got some unparalleled access to talk with some of the local magicians out there. So it was really great, and again, wouldn't have been possible without your help. So thank you guys to the Friends of the Magic Word. And if you would like to know more about how that you can help us out, then be sure to go and check that out at themagicwordpodcast.com. There's a tab to the left side over there. You can click on that and learn more about how that you can help us financially if you have the ability to do so. Also, I want to thank listeners for their suggestions and support whenever they send emails, and also for corrections. And I want to correct something that in the recent podcast that I did with Bob Kohler that I posted last week, I had mentioned something about a lecture that Bob Fitch had given at the TAOM that had to do with where he was explaining how that you would build your show, and that is even the props, where you would have the table and then you would put the cloth on top of that, and then you put the prop on top of that, then something on the prop, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, how you would build from the ground up, literally. And I had confused that with Bob Fitch, thinking it was Bob, but actually it was Max Howard. So I want to thank Richard Hatch for sending me an email to help straighten me out, because as Bob and I were talking about that, we kind of let that slide a little bit. We said, yeah, he was an award-winning magician, but Bob has won Broadway's Burns Mantle Award for the best featured actor in a musical. Actually, he hadn't, that is, Bob Fitch had not won an Emmy, whereas Max Howard had won an Emmy. But anyhow, thank you to Dick Hatch for that correction. So I just wanted to set that record straight, too. Also, in the podcast you're going to be hearing today with Gary Darwin, there is a quick mention about Siegfried and Roy and about the Tiger incident. And Gary makes a reference to Siegfried being the one who had been bitten by the tiger rather than Roy. So I want to correct that now. So when you hear that I recognize it was Roy, not Siegfried. And I think just in the conversation that as he said that, I didn't correct him, and it just kind of went on without making any of that correction. So I want to correct that up front. And again, that is who our guest is today, is Gary Darwin, not Siegfried or Roy. Although I tried to get together with them, but Siegfried was actually just getting over the flu that week, and actually doesn't give interviews either. I think the only interview he has given was with Larry King. So he's very secretive, and as far as his public life anymore. And I want to say Siegfried is like 77 years old. So I wish that I could get in to see him, and I'd love to have a conversation with him, but it just didn't happen this time around. I had used a lot of help with some friends who tried to use their influence, but nothing came about here this time. Maybe sometime in the future we'll try again. I mentioned in last week's podcast that this week's episode would be a broadcast of my chat with Fielding West. And after listening to it and editing a little bit, I thought, well, there are a few things that were discussed here that might be somewhat secretive, I guess. There were some things that were discussed that probably shouldn't be released until a later date. And so as a result, I'm going to hold off on that until sometime in early April. So I'll just kind of let you think about what it is that might might require me to hold that back a little bit, but I think that what will be happening will be good for him, and it will all be made clear in a few weeks. Anyhow, as I said, today's podcast is going to be with Gary Darwin, who has been around Las Vegas for about 50 years, and he's seen a lot of the greats rise and die or fall, and so we're going to get to hear a lot of his thoughts and his jokes and his philosophy, as well as hearing a lot of puns. And while I was there, I took a little tour of his studio also. And so I say studio, it was his home, and it's really he lives in a museum. He lives in this collection. And it's kind of dusty. I have to apologize on the front end of this for a few coughing spells I had. I tried to edit out most of that, but nevertheless, I think you need to take a look at the video that's on themagicwordpodcast.com and get to see the magnitude of all of this magic stuff, these collectibles he has in his home. So anyhow, he's got a lot of interesting stories and a lot of jokes, and I think you will really enjoy this conversation we have here today with Gary Darwin here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com, and I'm here at the home of and the museum of Mr. Gary Darwin here in Las Vegas. Hello, Gary.
Hello, and welcome to Las Vegas.
Thank you. I'm having a great time over here, and also, this is quite a museum, I mean, that we're in, and all of this stuff, I can't believe, is all just in one place. Every place that you look, there must be a million things in any direction you look over here.
Right. So. I wanted you, no matter where you look, you'd be entertained.
Yeah.
And I started collecting when I was about 6 years old. Mm-hmm. I bought a little ball and vase, and I kept it.
Yeah.
And I've kept all this. That was made out of wood. I think I paid 25 cents for it. Now it's worth about $35 because everything's made out of plastic.
That's true, yeah.
So you just sit on this stuff, and it's suddenly worth a lot of money.
Eventually it will be worth something.
I should have bought comics. I'd be rich, but I bought magic.
Yeah, I see you do have a few comics that
yeah, I've got mandrakes and... Yeah.
The comics you collect are ones that have
just
a magic
purely
theme.
Magic. Old Blackstone comics and Super Magician comics.
Yeah, yeah.
But the
Mandrake,
as you know, Superman number one goes for $1.5 million.
Wow. No.
Mom threw mine away. You know, I said, Mom, where's my comic? Oh, I threw them away. So I protected everything.
That's why they're worth so much, because I was the same way. I had the Fantastic Four, number 1 through 100. I had the first 100 of those. I had, you know, collected Spider-Man and other kinds of things. And I went back and asked my dad, you know, where they went. And he said, when we moved, I just threw the box away. They were just comic books.
We moved.
And my brother, the same way, had these baseball cards, you know, with Babe Ruth and I had forgotten who all, you know. And he said, yeah, they went too.
Well, it's the old joke. I could have been rich, but Mom threw my comics away.
Exactly.
Now, this is a rare... It's a Mandrake with Superman. Mm-hmm. That's a rare comic.
Wow. Now, speaking of rare comics, you're kind of a rare comic. You did not... Well, you've been working in Vegas. You've been here for 50 years?
I moved here 60 years ago. Yeah. My parents moved here. I was a teenager. And I thought, well, I'm ready for Vegas because I was working Tucson, Arizona nightclubs.
Yeah, doing comedy or magic or both?
Magic. Uh-huh. And I'm making $30 a week, and they had a couple little clubs.
Uh-huh.
And I figured, well, I'm ready for Vegas. Far from it. Mm-hmm. It took me 7 years to get a booking.
Wow.
I auditioned for the old Thunderbird Hotel.
On the Strip.
First afternoon show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in it. So that's my claim to fame. The first afternoon magician, Jerry Schaefer.
Who else was with you?
We had a comic who I don't remember his name. We had a live band back then. You had to have charts. Everything's recorded now.
Mm-hmm.
They put everything on recording and double the price. That turned into a corporation. But,
but
back
then,
when the mafia owned it, it was beautiful.
And you had live bands and everything.
Yeah, we had
You talk about the mafia, and I've heard other people. You know, I was talking with some other people who have been in Vegas for a long time and have told me some stories, and they keep saying, yeah, but the days of the mafia, that there were some issues, but it was run well. And that was in the days of the free buffet or the 99-cent shrimp cocktails or whatever else, because they wanted to get you in to get your money to gamble.
Right. They wanted to get you on the table. Now they get you on the room and the food and everything. It's a corporation.
And parking and everything, sure.
It's like Disneyland, adult Disneyland.
Adult Disneyland, that's right.
It started with Howard Hughes. You should have tarred and feathered the guy and run him out of town.
What did he do wrong?
He came in and bought 5 hotels in the airport.
Yeah.
He'd have to borrow a dime to make a phone call and put all his money into Vegas. But he made it into a corporation. Before that, it was strictly owned by the mafia, and we all made money because it drew people that wanted to come here and have fun. Now they come here to work.
Yeah.
And they go to bed early.
Yeah.
We had midnight shows. It would start at midnight. Mm-hmm. And the guys who get off duty, they had nothing to do, so I formed a midnight magic club.
Right.
And there come Siegfried and Roy and Lance Burton and David Copperfield. Now they get off at 8 or 9, and they go home. The club is not quite what it used to be, but we still have a good meeting every Wednesday for the last 51 years.
Wow. And that's moved different places. I remember
we've had lots of homes.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And where is it located now?
Now we're at Tommy Rocker's. It's a little nightclub off of Dean Martin and Flamingo.
Okay.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. We were at Boomer's for 15 years, but they drove us out. They brought in a rap band.
I heard about this. And it was too loud. And
yeah, it closed the door. It still come through.
Yeah, and you really couldn't have conversations.
So I've always said, if you've got absolutely no talent, just rhythm, get into rap.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
or if you've got absolutely no talent, become an illusionist. Roll it up.
That's right. And hire some assistants who can dance, and you just point. Open the doors.
And we've got a lot of rock and roll magicians in this town. I'm not going to mention who. Uh-huh. Then we've had a lot of brilliant magicians.
Yeah.
Copperfield, you know, he can do it all. And Lance Burton.
Right.
They're from the ground up. They're highly trained.
But before that they came, this town, as I understood it, back in the mafia days, I guess, that we were talking about, really didn't have magicians working there.
No.
Because they said magic's not going to play in Vegas.
Well,
before Siegfried and Roy came.
They were for costume change. They put them in front of a curtain and let Channing do a 7-minute act or Marvin Roy do his light bulbs. Mm-hmm. And that was for years. Finally, someone opened the curtains. Guess who it was? Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah, at Hallelujah Hollywood, wasn't that right? They were working at MGM?
Yeah, they started at the Tropicana.
Tropicana, okay.
And then they went into Stardust.
Yeah.
And they were the feature acts. They did a half hour. And then somebody got the wonderful idea, let them do a full evening show. And that was the start of it. And then other magicians came in.
Yeah.
Copperfield came in with a full evening show, and Lance Burton. Mm-hmm. And that was the start of the big show. And to this day, there's 3 or 4 magicians doing big shows.
On the Strip, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you see their pictures just on the plastered on the sides of the mm-hmm. casinos and everything then as well. Now, you said that you were doing a comedy act then also.
I was doing pure sleight of hand.
Oh, what sleight? I mean, like billiard ball manipulation, that kind
good,
of thing?
Good cards? Charts. Mm-hmm. Just up there doing the billiards in the back palm and the zombie. And they wanted 12 minutes. Whatever they wanted, I'd give them. I'd say, how many minutes you need? Well, we're going to put you in the Lido. We need 7 minutes.
Yeah. Because that was costume change. Yeah. Again, you were like on the apron.
Then what happens, I was just a young, cute kid. I could stand there and pose with the billiard balls and get by. And what happens, you get older, you gain weight, and I call it the W.C. Fields syndrome. And he was a young, good-looking little juggler.
Yeah.
Then he got old, fat, and ugly, and drunk, and he was brilliant.
As a comedian.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So that's what happened to me. I started doing a lot of one-liners and just aware of the audience. Every show was different. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody got up and left or if you had a heckler, I was ready. I used to be nervous backstage. I said, gee, what if I drop something? What if I forget my script? Now when I'm backstage, I say, I hope everything goes wrong because I'm ready for it. So I did put out an album called Reaction Ad Lib.
Reaction ad lib.
Yeah, what do you do when people get up and leave in the middle of your act?
You got to keep going.
I said, don't go. I promise to get better.
Yeah.
You've all heard of a standing ovation. There they go, a walking ovation. Yeah. The men's room's to the right. But have fun with everything. No matter if they're talking in the front row, get them.
Yeah.
If they come in late, get them. Uh-huh. And that way, every show is slightly different. And the audience can see you over and over. Like Rickles, every show is different. So he was my inspiration. I couldn't believe it. The little fat guy would walk on stage with nothing and just kill me.
And make fun of the audience.
I'd just fall off my chair laughing.
Yeah.
And they'd give him $100,000 a week.
Was that right?
Yeah. And working lounges and things.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And packing them in.
Yeah. So he was my inspiration. And he didn't need a 4-letter word.
Yeah.
And he's still working. He's 90.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Huh. Now, as I mentioned, I was going to see Mike Hammer show later this evening, and so I understand he's kind of a Don Rickles
yeah,
type
I finally
of style,
saw him. So. I was very impressed. Yeah. A lot of one-liners and does original magic.
Yeah.
He's kind of a young Don Rickles.
Yeah. And so the things that then you were doing, or when you were performing at the end of the magic career, manipulation, I don't think necessarily as being something that is a talking act. It was just done to music. Or were you talking?
Yeah, I did pantomime with music.
Okay. And so then after that, then you were
talking. I practiced thousands of hours on billiard balls, Miser's Dream, back palming.
Yeah.
And then one day I put a snake in the basket. It blew it all off. I had to take out the billiard balls.
Yeah.
I think I practiced 5 minutes on the snake in the basket, but the trick was made for me. I dance around it, play the flute.
Yeah.
And so I started adding more comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And as you get older, you know, and your sleight of hand doesn't get any better when you get older.
Yeah.
I've got diabetes, so all of a sudden I've got skinny fingers.
Yeah.
You lose a lot of muscle.
Got a lot of windows, yeah.
Yeah. Because I used to drink beer that would get rid of my windows. That was my excuse.
Yeah.
And, you know, my hero would have a few shots of bourbon, Sinatra, drink a bottle of Jack Daniels a day.
Now you said your hero. So you spent some time with him?
No, I just liked the way he came out.
I just wondered if you ever worked with him or saw him backstage or whatever. So
he was voted the singer of the century. You know why?
Why is that?
Phrasing. What is your theory of phrasing?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I like, he's singing the same song every night differently, the way he felt it. The other guys were mechanical singers.
Yeah.
Same thing, note for note. They were boring.
Yeah.
But Sinatra was never a bore, and he had good ad-lib ability.
Hmm.
He hit a bad note one night and said, gee, I think I just swallowed a shot glass. Maybe that note's on Medicare. And then Don Rickles he loved Don Rickles.
Yeah.
He'd come in to see Rickles, and Rickles would say, Frank, come on in. Make yourself at home. Hit somebody. And he loved that.
So did you see the other guys, I guess Dean Martin and Sammy
Davis Jr.? I never saw Dean because he never had a magician on the bill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, Liberace brought in Marvin Roy and Channing, so I saw Liberace a lot.
Yeah.
And I saw Eartha Kitt. She brought in Carl Ballantyne.
Yeah,
but if they didn't have a magician,
you didn't go see him.
And I regret that because Dean had a masterpiece of timing. He didn't change the act for 30 years.
Oh, is that right?
Dean was the world's laziest guy, singing the same song. And he'd rather be out on the golf course. You know, when he came in with Jerry Lewis, Jerry would say, well, let's go rehearse. And Dean said, the hell with it. We know the act. I'll be on the golf course.
Yeah.
And he made more money. When he died, he had $500 million.
Wow.
Jerry Lewis is kind of broke now.
Yeah.
You don't even have the telephone.
Yeah,
but he's
true.
Still working. They roll him out in a wheelchair.
I was just talking with Murray Sawchuk recently, and he said, I just saw Jerry Lewis 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, here. So, yeah, he was out for something. So.
Yeah.
And apparently Jerry Lewis had written a magic book, and he was showing me.
I had Jerry autograph it. He wouldn't come up, but his manager took it up to his dressing room, and he was on the front of Genie. I had him autograph that.
Yeah.
And, I drew a big poster. That's my hobby, drawing posters.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And he autographed that.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got Jerry. But Jerry, a pretty big ego problem. His ego is so big, he went on his honeymoon alone.
Now that's funny.
So, but, here's the type of drawings I do. I've drawn 400 of them. And there's a famous magician.
Paul Daniels?
We just lost him.
That was
England's
bad.
Greatest. There's his autograph. So I've drawn Sinatra and Jerry Lewis, and then you get their autograph. And when I pass away, they'll be worth a lot of money. Artists never make money
during
when
their lifetime.
Alive.
Yeah.
But when they pass away, this thing might go for $1.95 now. And later on, it might go for $3 or $4.
I'll give you $2 for it right now.
Yeah. There
you
go.
So you got a lot. Now, do you just take a photo of them?
I get it from a photo. Once in a while...
they'll do a sitting?
Juliana Chen pours for them, and these take about a half hour.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I do a one-minute caricature.
Were you classically trained?
As a very young kid, I could get it like... It's a given talent. Either you do it or you don't. It's like singing.
Yeah.
Either you do it or you don't. And I recorded some songs, and people would come in. I wouldn't tell them who it is. I'd say, who is this guy? And they'd say, well, that's Sinatra. It was me. I figured out his phrasing and his breathing technique. And then I went for hyperbaric oxygen for diabetes, and it dehydrated my vocal cords. Now I sound like Louis Armstrong. Well, hello, Dolly. Like someone cut my throat. So I I'm sorry. I wanted to cut an album, just all singing, just give it to my friends. But I still do the art.
Well, Rich Little, I understand, is still playing on the Strip.
Yeah, I met Rich.
Somebody who does
impressions. He was dating Melinda.
That's right. He did date Melinda for a while.
Melinda.
Before Lance married and divorced her.
Well, I got Melinda and Lance together.
Did you?
12-month courtship.
Yeah.
They were made for each other.
Seemed to be the Queen of Magic and
they
the King of Magic.
They were both kind of born-again Christians, mm-hmm. and I felt like Cupid. Then they got married. It lasted 8 months. And to this day, we're not really certain what happened.
I was about to ask you, is that anything that's public?
Well, there are lots of theories, and I'm not going to get into
it. That's what I understand. Yeah.
But he says, Lance, are you ever going to marry again? He said, never.
Yeah.
So whatever it was, she cured him of marriage.
Well, now that he's retired, he's told you and me both that what he'd rather be is a farmer and move back
to
Kentucky.
He gets up at 6 in the morning.
Yeah, with the chickens.
That's when I go to bed. You know, I'm up early with you. Because I'm a night person.
Yeah.
And you're either night or day. And you know how they figure that out?
How's that?
They put 100 people in a hotel, boarded it up. They didn't know if it was night or day.
Yeah. Hmm.
And the night people would stay up 15 minutes later every night. Mm-hmm. And the day people go to bed 15 minutes earlier. And at the end of 30 days, they found out that 1/4 of all human are night people.
Hmm.
And that's the shift you should work. But I did a lot of day jobs, birthday parties and things. But if you're on the wrong biological time clock, mm-hmm. you pay the price. I probably lost 5 years of my lifespan doing day things.
When you should have been doing night things.
I'm not alert at this hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm barely able to talk.
Well, and so some of the other people you'd mentioned that... Rich Little, you said you'd met him before, so you spent any time
directing Melinda.
Yeah.
Her mother brought Melinda over. She's just a young teenager,
mm-hmm.
adorable, very cute.
Yeah.
And they decided they wanted her to do an illusion act inspired by Siegfried and Roy. Melinda was one of the dancers. And I guess they thought, well, if Siegfried and Roy can roll out the furniture, so can she. So they bought her a lot of illusions.
Yeah, big illusions.
And
too,
she could roll it out.
Yeah.
I wanted to make her into a magician, but it didn't happen. Because I liked the way Lance would open. He would prove himself. He'd come out and establish himself with the doves and cards.
Right.
They knew he was for real.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted her to do the same thing. But no way. She's a straight illusionist.
She wanted to come rolling out the boxes immediately the very first trick.
Well, she wanted to roll the boxes out because... That does require hours of practice.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly Lance had done all the practice. I remember seeing him for the first time. I saw his award-winning act when he won the gold medal for the IBM Evansville, Indiana, I believe.
Well, he won everything.
Yeah,
the IBM.
But that was the first
Then he went over to Europe. Americans never won that. They had to give it to Lance. He was so good.
So good, yeah.
Yeah, then he came back. Signed a 2-week contract with the Follies Bergère at the Trop. Lasted 8 years.
Yeah.
And he could have still been there, but he quit and went into the Hacienda for mm-hmm. 5 years. Then Peter Ravine got him the big contract for $110 million.
Yeah.
And he finished that and retired at 50.
As I understand, that Peter had negotiated one of the last of the best contracts for magicians.
Well, back then that was the ultimate contract.
Yeah.
Now,
as opposed to now having four
walls. Well, now you've got Chris Angel. That's a good contract.
Yeah.
It's a more modern contract.
But is his room run by the Luxor? In other words, to your knowledge, is the Luxor paying him or is he paying the Luxor?
I don't know. Quite often you have to buy your own room.
Yeah, like Penn & Teller own their theater.
I remember Robert Goulet came in and bought his own room and lost $100,000 because that type of music doesn't go now.
Not like it used to,
No. They want young rock and rollers. They can't sing, but as long as they're cute, that's the main thing.
Yeah, if they're popular with the kids.
And magic is kind of going that way, too.
Yeah.
When I was a young kid, it was a lot of old guys like Thurston and Blythe, grandfatherly guys, mm-hmm. and we loved them, but now they want young kids.
That's funny. You know, I agree with you. It seems that the media is giving more attention to younger people, and if you have gray hair, then that doesn't mean you're experienced. That means that you're too old and we don't want to see you.
Yeah.
They want the younger people. And I say that because the perfect example was recently, I guess, with Paul Gertner being on the Penn & Teller Foolish show,
mm-hmm.
that he was the one who had invented this unshuffled card trick, but they were going to have somebody else do it because he was too old for their demographic, basically. And
you've got to lie about your age. Now, I know how old you are, but you tell me you're 40. You don't have any real wrinkles.
Yeah.
Tell them you've reached the metallic age.
Yeah.
A little silver in your hair, a little gold in your teeth, and a little lead. Well, we're not going down that far. But that's your opening line when you walk out. You're the metallic age.
Metallic age. I like that.
Yeah.
In my golden years. Yeah, almost. Starting to be. Yeah, and so... Doing comedy, that did you do more of the talking act towards the end as far as just a...
Yeah, the last 20 years I've become funnier. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't dare open my mouth. I was very shy. I'd just go out and do pure manipulation.
But was the stuff that you had memorized from a script, I mean, like Robert Orban type stuff, or was it...
I read
stuff
all
you...
the Orban. Sure. I've got a library of almost 1,000 books, and I'd pick out the good stuff.
Yeah.
Then I got to the point where I'd write my own stuff.
Yeah.
And a sample, you know you're getting old when you go to the park and the pigeons feed you. And I decided to just ask a question, put a funny line on it.
Sure.
You know, if you got a crying baby in the audience, I say, does anyone have any duct tape? Don't cry, I promise to get better.
Yeah.
Is there a babysitter in the audience? Sit on the baby. Yeah. But no matter what happens, memorize 1,000 lines and hope you remember it at the right time.
At the right time, something.
Usually when the show's over, I say, damn it, I should have used that line. But you need closing lines, opening lines, and just if you got a small audience. I've worked shows where there'd be 4 people in the audience, and I'd walk out and say, yeah, I'm not saying this is a small audience, but I've been in bed with more people. You get a big nightclub lines.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you've got to edit yourself. The next day you might do kid shows.
Sure.
So the magicians would give me a kid show because a lot of them have developed the bad habit. And then you got a cough there. There's a new cure for a cough. You drink a quart of prune juice, you'll never cough again. You'll be afraid to. But invariably, somebody in the audience will cough.
Yeah.
But just be aware of everything.
Or the phone rings. Somebody's cell phone goes
off. When the phone rings, I would say, that's my agent. He wants 10% of my unemployment. Answer that. It could be God. He's got a question.
Yeah.
Answer that. It could be the phone. But you're ready for everything.
Yeah, you have to be.
And I've got a theory. I've never known a comic with Alzheimer's. Think about it. Mm-hmm. Magicians, actors, everybody's getting Alzheimer's now.
Yeah.
And, you know, your memory don't improve as you get older.
Uh-huh.
I know I had too much to drink. I wanted to give a speech. I forgot. But I had a lot of forgetful jokes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've got a great memory, but it's short. There's only 3 things I can't remember. Names, faces, and the 3rd thing I forgot. I've got a photographic mind, but I forgot to put in the film. I had a great thought the other night. A thought struck me. And I went to the hospital and had it removed. But anyway, I've got a lot on my mind, but it's a vacant lot. And I said, did you get that on videotape? No, because that was funny. And then finally my little speech came back to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I had had 2 beers on the way over, and then they put a bottle of wine on my table. I knocked out, come up and get your award. Well, I'd forgot my speech, but it was, I'm ready. If I forget, I'm ready to go.
Well, yeah, some things have to come to you. You know, as a comic, you have to be able... I think there was a good point that you hit on then as well, as having an opening line, a middle line, and a closing line, because I've talked with so many magicians about how that we should have an opening, a beginning, middle, and an end to each trick. In other words, that as you're developing a trick, that you know, in order to create the interest, et cetera, and then put that trick within an act, so this way that your act also has a beginning, middle, and end.
Right.
But including it in that, when you do have a talking act, that there should be... that you think about your opening line, your middle line, and how you're going to close. You just don't walk off and say, see you later.
You
just
need
a trail
before the show starts line. You're backstage.
Really?
Testing the microphone. Say, folks, the show's going to begin in about 5 minutes. So if anyone would like to examine the plumbing, now would be a good time. They like you already and you haven't even appeared.
That's right. You know, that's another good point is that I haven't done this. And I'm going to start now that you mentioned this.
Yeah.
Because I will always, you know, you do your mic check before the audience arrives and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been those occasions whenever that is time, okay, let's switch on the mic and it's like something happened between your mic check and the time you're
testing.
That's right.
1, 2, 3.
And
it pays to go to college. You know, whatever. But
you need to talk beforehand.
Yeah.
So that way you know the mic is working.
That's right.
You know, moments before you come out through the curtains or around this, you know, to your props or whatever.
No,
even though that you've already tested it earlier, you need to retest. That's an excellent idea.
I don't care if the lights go out. What if the mic goes haywire. What are you going to say? Mm-hmm. Everything's going to go wrong. Murphy's Law.
Yeah, the invisible thread's going to break sometime. Wrong. Yeah,
I don't care if you're doing the zombie or the Chinese rings. You're going to have a bad night once in a while. And, and I used to be nervous. Now, I say, I hope everything goes wrong tonight. Now I drink coffee backstage. Because that makes you much more alert. This coffee we're drinking is so weak you won't even hold sugar.
Now, you mentioned also, like, for the last 51 years, they've been having the Gary Darwin Wednesday night magic meetings, and you said Siegfried and Roy and others used to come in.
Yeah.
Tell me about Siegfried and Roy. I mean, that certainly we know that Roy had suffered from having the lion
that
incident and all that.
Instant retirement.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a bad way to go. His duty was to train the animals and keep them from biting Siegfried, and he's the one that got bit.
Yeah.
And it's a mystery. Because we think it was on videotape, but we never saw it.
I had heard that, and so that's not a rumor. You think that really that there was recorded someplace?
Yeah. And then they found out I was in a wheelchair because I lost a leg with the diabetes.
Yeah.
So I've been hopping around for 5 years on one leg.
Yeah.
And now I only eat at IHOPs. And I went before the judge the other day, and he threw me out of court. I didn't have a leg to stand on. So I do a lot of one-leg jokes, and I'm in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And I don't eat my vegetables yet. You know why?
Why?
It's tough to get them out of a wheelchair. But think about it. There's a joke there. So
yeah.
These jokes could be worse. They could be mine.
Yeah. Yeah. I have taken years to steal these. So many different people have died from me.
I've developed a philosophy, and I don't know who wrote it, but it's brilliant. Don't take life too seriously. You're not going to get out of it alive anyway. Most people are deadly serious about every day. No matter what happens to you. Laugh. I never went into depression. Most people compliment and say, Gary, most people, when they lose a leg, they go into depression. I never did. You got to laugh at it.
Yeah.
Then these kids today are being born, no arms and no legs. Now, that's kind of serious.
Yeah.
So when I looked next door when I was in the hospital, the guy had both legs gone. You don't know what's going to happen to you in
life.
No. But if you can retain your sense of humor, you lose all your mom and dad and all your pets and all your relatives. But don't lose your sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
So my philosophy, because when you're in a wheelchair, you're not out drinking at bars picking up girls.
That's right.
So here's my philosophy. The greatest joy in life is to give other people joy. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if you draw a picture for them or sing a song or make them laugh. Give them joy.
Right.
And it's really the ultimate. And you know where I got that from? Bob Hope.
Oh, yeah.
24 hours a day he was on making people laugh.
Yeah.
And he lived to be 100. Because laughter de-stresses you.
Mm-hmm.
So I've already de-stressed you a little bit by making you laugh.
Yes.
I've added a week to your lifespan.
So how much I owe you for that?
And I've often thought of forming a hospital. The first room would be laugh therapy.
Yeah.
Second room, music therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I got a girlfriend. She's a music therapist. And, you know, violins and melody and good music is very good for you.
Yeah.
Other music will stress you out. You got to be on drugs to listen to it. And then you've got pet therapy. You got a pet. Pet your dog. Talk to him, your cat. Yeah, that's just great therapy.
Sure.
Food therapy can be good.
Mm-hmm.
But I love my pizzas, and I shouldn't eat it. But I invented the cactus pizza. Ever heard of that?
No, I've never heard of
you
cactus
eat it and pick your teeth at the same time. Chef, how long will the pizza be? It won't be long. It's still round. Remember the oldest pizza joke?
No, what's that?
The chef said, do you want me to cut the pizza into six parts or eight parts? Oh. I said, cut into six parts. I'm not that hungry.
I can't eat eight. Yeah.
Those are wonderful jokes.
All right, we're going to take a break in the action from Gary Darwin for just a few moments to introduce again our sponsor, the GreatAmericanMagicCompany.com. At this time, I normally would have Eric Citron, who is the manager, owner, and proprietor of the Great American Magic Company. .com. However, due to the snow that the Northeast is having right now, he's under the weather. I mean, quite literally under the weather. Not sick, it's just that his power is out up in that part of the country. As a result, he doesn't have any internet service. But nevertheless, he'll be back again then next week. And in the meantime, that doesn't mean that he's not able to fulfill your orders. So he should be able to get to you. But if due to the nature of the storm that he is delayed, please understand
understand that everything will get back on schedule quickly, but this is affecting everybody apparently up in the Northeast right now as we are recording this podcast for this week. But a couple of new things that I know that he would want to talk to you about, and that is one of the products is called Kung Fu Foot by Hector Mancha. It's kind of a funny idea and premise, but it is basically a card is selected, returned to the deck. You spring the cards and you take your shoe off. you then would spring the cards at your foot, and you have a stocking on your foot, and suddenly the selected card appears between your toes, or you know, it's being held by your toes through your sock foot, you know, basically. And everything is all included with this that you're going to be needing in order to do this. It is a very unusual kind of a trick to do, certainly, and it is something that can be done close up or stage, just as long as you know that you're going to be springing cards and eventually you're going to have to pick up the cards. But it is quite a different kind of a revelation. It's not your usual, you know, card to pocket or card to wallet kind of a thing or anything. So that's a little bit different. Also, the newest thing I believe he's got then available right now is called Move. That's N-O-V-E, Move by Danny Weiser and Taiwan Ben. And this is an interesting product also. It's basically a pen that is kind of like a, not a Sharpie, but like a Bic pen, in which that the part of the cap, actually, that's the clip that attaches to the cap, visibly can move along the barrel of the Bic pen. And then it can be taken off and shown all to be back together again. It actually appears, disappears, you know, reappears then again and moves down the barrel, moves around. It is quite a unique kind of impromptu kind of a miracle, something that you can carry with you. And so that's the newest thing called Move by Danny Weiser and Taiwan Ben. So a couple of great new products that are available out there, and I think you should go and check them out. You can find the trailer, I'm sure, available over there at the website at thegreatamericanmagiccompany.com. And so, Eric, I hope that everything gets sorted out there fairly quickly and that you return to some good weather again. So for us, let's return now again to our discussion with Gary Darwin.
Those are wonderful jokes. Oxymorons. When you hand somebody a sponge, say, hold it up a little lower. You know, they hold, they make a fist.
Yeah, you stand lower the ground.
Do you have a favorite oxymoron? I'm writing a book now, 101 Oxymorons. And magicians can have more fun. Do you have a favorite?
I hadn't thought about it. I have like jumbo shrimp or military intelligence and that kind of a thing. I'll tell you my favorite oxymoron, I guess, is country music.
Well, if you really want to be depressed, listen to country music. You go right over the cliff.
It can.
I lost my old lady in the beer truck and all that nasal crap. I do a Sinatra singing Willie Nelson. Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. Knock, knock. I like to shoot the country western singers.
You know, that reminds me that somebody told me that on Buddy Rich's, for those who don't know Buddy Rich, younger guys, he was a great drummer.
Oh, he was the greatest drummer.
That's what he was.
The fastest and sensational.
He was. And when he was in his deathbed, and a nurse was trying to keep him comfortable and said, well, Mr. Rich, is there anything that makes you uncomfortable? And he said, yes. And she said, what is it? He said, country music.
Oh,
yeah.
I just can't quite handle it.
Yeah. So I went back to Siegfried. So tell me some stories. Is Siegfried, you know, when he would come, did he actually perform? Did he talk about, you know, hey, I'm
late
to the show?
Well, he'd come to the club. Roy would go home to the animals, and Siegfried come in with just an old straw hat and jeans and just sit there and drink with us. Very nice guy.
Do you ever tell you any stories? I'm just curious. I always like, you know, listeners like to hear stories about
this. Well, you know, I'd go see the show. He'd give me total comp. Uh-huh. And I asked the waitress. She saw the show 1,000 times. Uh-huh. And I said, what's the worst night they've ever had?
That's a good question.
And she said, one night the cheetah jumped out of the sub trunk and threw up on a guy in the front row.
Threw up on a guy.
Yeah, that's a bad night. And I asked Siegfried, I said, what's the worst thing they ever had? He said, well, we brought the elephant out before we vanished and let him parade around. And he pissed on some guy in the front row. And elephant piss is very strong.
Uh-huh.
And
That reminds me of the story about Walter Blaney one time producing his Texas-sized bunny. And yeah. as he was doing it, and he was, you know, showing it to the people in the audience. Yeah. Of course, the spotlight was on him, and he just saw that people were going, oh, and raising their hands, you know. And he was thinking, hey, they love me. And then he realized that as he was doing that, he's basically, you know, baptizing the first people in the first row, because the rabbit was letting itself go and urinating into the audience as he was basically slinging this rabbit as he was showing
the kidneys went. That happened to Mark Wilson.
Yeah.
And Mark had a good line. He said, that's rabbit's revenge.
Rabbit's revenge.
And then the wife came out, slipped on the piss, and fell down. Hmm. It was a bad night.
Yeah.
But he had little one-lines for it, so he survived.
Did you ever have some particularly bad night or something?
Yeah, I've had bad nights. I was doing the crematory, and they wanted me to use a celebrity. I forget who she was. And if I'd have used her, she'd have broke her hip. I used a young kid. I cremated. But the thing lost its center of balance and fell over. Mm-hmm. She fell out of the trap door right there.
On the stage.
Yeah, so I didn't feel like joking, because it could have hurt her.
Yeah.
But I told Siegfried about it. I said, what would you have done when your illusion goes totally bad? Well, I brought the curtain down. I didn't want to ad lib.
Yeah.
And he said, I would have stayed in my dressing room for 2 weeks. Well, I came home and reinvented three other ways of doing the crematory without using a coffin. I just put a girl on a glass table and throw a sheet, pour gas, and then cremate her. That's the ultimate cremation.
Well, sure.
Rather than sit around and be depressed about it.
Yeah.
So I invented other ways of doing it. But I used the old Abbott crematory. Do you remember it?
That was the one with where it has like a casket, basically.
Yeah, and I had the slider
and
into
the skeleton inside.
Throw the torch. Yeah. I improved it. I made bigger slits. I scotch tape, flash paper over the holes so it would burst into flame. Mm-hmm. I found a great smoke, and it would just cover the stage and then disappear real quick.
Yeah.
And it was very strong, and some agent in the audience caught it. And he says, Gary, I want that crematory on Hollywood Palace and that floating ball. And I said, I'm finally going to hit national TV.
Yeah.
And damned if they didn't go off the air after 6 years.
Before they got to you.
Yeah, it's all luck, you know.
Yeah, it's all a matter of timing.
Yeah, I was a pretty young guy.
So did you do a lot of illusions then also?
I mean, I did one stuff? Illusion. I did the Super X.
Yeah.
You remember that one?
I've got one. Yeah.
Yeah, I paid $50 for it.
Okay.
Siegfried came over and bought it because it made a good photo.
Yeah, it did.
He was smart. He cut off both ends so you couldn't see the board. She was floating in midair without a board, which was the weak part of Super X. Mm-hmm. So he came back and gave me a $100 tip. I paid $50 for the trip. Then he bought it again, give me a $100 tip. And then he came over and wanted to bar it for the third time, but I'd already loaned it out.
Yeah.
Because it made, you know, Lance barred it, Melinda barred it, everybody barred it.
Yeah.
Because it did make good photo. Mm-hmm. And then I thought,
Then he just paused.
That's the phone.
Yeah. What does that mean?
That means that's my agent. He wants 10% of my unemployment. That could be God. We'll let it ring. We'll crack one-liners until they stop.
Eventually.
Yeah, that's God. He's got a question.
Well, you know, going over to this.
Because the phone will go off while you're performing
in
the audience.
Yeah.
And you have to answer that. It could be the phone.
Yeah.
And whoever this is, they're not going to give up. They're very patient.
They'll call again if it's important.
That's some of the things that's going to. And then if you answer the phone, say, pardon me, folks, it's my wife. You want me to bring home a dozen eggs and a loaf of bread? All right, I'm on stage now. I can't talk to you. And you can have more fun on the phone.
Right.
But I wonder who this is.
It sounds like they're persistent.
Now, if you want to answer it, you can reach it there.
Wow. No.
Okay.
They should stop. There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. As far as the Super X and that being a good photo op, you know, I had used George W. Bush, and I had a good photo op with him, and was a longtime friend, long story, that I'd worked with him, and he had assisted me on some. I'd cut and restored his tie, pulled his shirt off his back, and all this one time on a few shows I did, but as my assistant. But I had him on the Super X, and I've got a picture that was in the newspaper, you know, with him being on that too. So, yeah, you talk about that, you know, something that's a great photo op, you know, the Super X.
What did you do about the board?
I'll say exactly. I made the board, I had him lay on the board.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I had the board out.
But who's floating, the board or the president?
Well, and that was the thing, is that I had two different supports. and this was for a United Way program, and I had one support that looked like a dollar sign, the other one had the logo of the United Way, you know, helping hands, basically. And I talked about him being the chairman of the United Way program, campaign that particular year, and that he is being supported by the money and the hands of the people. But without the money, then we just had the volunteers, and I took that one away. So then he's still laying on a board, because apparently the board is being supported by these two things, so it made sense as he lays on that. And then he moved the one away, and then say, but then after a while, the volunteers would get tired of just doing everything without any kind of financial support, and eventually they get tired and go away. And before long, he, you know, then George has no visible means of support. And, you know, that was my line, my script for that. And so, but it's important that we do have your help, and then I brought that back, and that we do have the money, and so we need to make sure we raise enough money, and I brought the support back. And then he got, you know, turned around, got off the board. Yeah. So it all made sense, you know, with that. Well, but but when they took the picture and put it in the newspaper, of course, it was when he's floating and I'm passing the hoop over him, you know, kind of
made a great photo.
Yeah.
But I did it live, and somebody said, let me see you dance. And I never did the trick after that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what do you say when a heckler's? I mean, there are different ways of handling hecklers. I know some comedians will make fun of the heckler, so that way the audience will turn on them. And other times they might just kind of let it go, as if you don't, because you know the audience hears what they say.
Sure. And you can avoid it.
How's that?
But
you mean by not saying anything, not addressing it?
I prefer to...
Then what do you say?
Say, let's play a new game. The one with the mic does the talking.
That's a good one.
I do a single. Now, I can get risque. Can we get risque over this at all?
You can go ahead.
You work in a nightclub and say, you know, I'd like to slap you, but I hate to see splatter. And, you know, and then they say, I'm sorry, folks, he's got a waterproof voice. Nobody can drown him out. And, you know, there's just, they've written books on how to stop hecklers.
Oh, sure, sure.
And you really don't want to try to out-heckle me. Because that's my business.
That's the thing, is you don't want to go head-to-head. You know, you certainly don't want to lose and people, because once they get on the heckler side, then everybody is going to be against you.
So they're
you
really to, on my side.
Need to stop that
if
immediately.
If they're talking in the front row or during the show, they're really, say, I wish he would stop them.
Yeah. Now, some people say they just step it up, you know, that they'll be a little, you know, more rude, and after the third time, it's basically, you know, we're going to have to get security, you know, and let them out at that point.
Now, there's the cell phone.
You've got everybody in the world who is wanting you.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on, I'm going to pause this.
You got people talking in the audience. There might be a table of four. They're not even watching you.
Right.
And then you say, I'd say, I'm sorry, folks. They've got waterproof voices. I wish we could drown them out.
Yeah.
Or what show are you watching?
Yeah.
Or, you know, you can... can you hear me up here? I can hear you down there.
Sure.
And you can stop them. Now, if you're Dean Martin, you just say, security, throw them out.
Just like that. And they will, they're there, yeah.
Think of, Italians do not excel in humor. Name a headline Italian comic that played the strip. Most of them are Jewish. You drive down the strip, there's Buddy Hackett, Don Rickles, Milton Berle, Shaky Green, right down to Dice Clay.
Yeah.
But name a headline Italian comic. With a script, they're all right, Don DeLuise and so on, but they don't ad-lib.
Yeah.
They're great singers, they're great actors, but they don't make comics.
Mm-hmm.
And name a headline German comic. Where would you be without humor? In Germany. Are you ready? German comedy. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Gestapo.
Gestapo.
I'll ask the questions. That's as funny. I don't want to offend the Germans. They're great mathematicians, but they're not comics, you know.
Oh, that's true. Now, speaking of writing, there have been a lot of books written, you know, with lines and everything like that. Now, your books, was your first book about thumb tip miracles?
Yeah, thumb tip miracles.
What year was that?
Still floating around. That was 25 years ago.
Okay.
Somebody, I didn't think of writing a book, but he saw what I had invented. He said, Gary, let me put this in book form.
Mm-hmm.
So we did, and it's, I've got a... Well, the man that published him suddenly died, so I went over and bought what was left from the wife.
Okay.
So
so you just republished someone else's book then, or do you add more of your own things, or we mean that?
No, then I published a book, Thumbtip Secrets.
Okay.
Because I didn't do well on Thumbtip Miracles. I got screwed, and he kept all the money, so that irritated the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a sequel, which was maybe better, Thumbtip Secrets, 25 brand new thumbtips. Then a Thumbtip Thinking, a third book, and then I made a DVD, the Encyclopedia Thumbtip, 2 hours, and that just, I've invented well over 100 ways to use the thumbtip.
What's your favorite?
Well, the greatest thumbtip trick, naturally, I was a kid when I first saw Grandpa vanish a cigarette in a hanky.
Yeah, just the classic,
The first thumbtip trick ever invented was by an Englishman, Professor Derwin, he vanished a little hanky. Mm-hmm. He painted a thimble flesh color.
Yeah.
And vanished the hanky. And that little thumb tip or thimble is under glass in England, 1885.
Mm-hmm.
But what a great gimmick, because it makes you look like a great sleight of hand artist.
Yeah.
And then I've invented a lot of tricks. A torn and restored Kleenex with a thumb tip, because I've ringed it up so you can borrow the Kleenex from the audience.
Hmm.
It's a complete routine. And then to restore a match by... The smoke comes out of your fist, and then the match is restored. But damn it, I didn't invent delight. That made a couple hundred grand.
You were so close.
Yeah,
no, more than 100 grand.
Rocco?
Made millions.
And he bought the idea from somebody, probably for $100,
yeah,
and made probably several hundred thousand dollars
sure.
off of that.
Sure.
It's the patent finally expired, so other people are making it now.
Yeah, he's being ripped off all over the world.
And one of the greatest tricks was squash.
Squash, yeah. That was the thing that made Abbott sell more of those than anything.
Yeah, it's called the trick that made Abbott. Abbott bought it from a dentist.
Oh, is that
probably
right?
Give him $10.
Explain the effect to the people who don't know squash.
Well, you have a little shot glass. You can fill it up with anything
right.
except carbonation.
Yes.
And then you put your both hands around it and clap your hand. And it's going one of the great tricks of all time.
Yeah.
But it had a weakness. It needed misdirection.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I put the glass in my right hand. And you can let people dip their finger to make sure it's real liquid.
Real water, yeah.
And then I grab it. I put the gimmick in it,
mm-hmm.
grab it, and here I am. I reach in for a coin and throw it on the table. Well, there's your misdirection. You let it fly. They think you're still holding it, see?
And as they're looking at the coin to put that...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You wave the coin. Now, let everybody grab your wrist, your fist.
It's
make
gone.
Make a deal out of
yeah.
it. And it's gone. It's truly a miracle.
Yeah.
And you say, you want to know where it's at? It's in my back pocket. Reach around under the coat, pop it.
Yeah.
And it's truly one of the great tricks. But it needed misdirection.
Yeah.
And we didn't get around to the Super X.
Oh, yeah.
Great trick. But you float it on a bed of nails.
Oh.
Now you've got a reason for it. Now it's death-defying. It's sensational.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea.
Because when I saw Zany Blaney, once again, a big fat board, and I thought, well, make it. I put a cradle in it, so she's actually on a cradle, not the board, and let the board fall. There she is floating without the board.
Well, didn't Harbin have something like that where the board...
Yeah, it's not a brand new idea, but Zany Blaney could have done it and then put a television jack on it so it floats up 12 inches, remote control.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That would have made the trick truly brilliant, but everyone went out and bought one. And when everyone is doing it, I usually don't do... I never did
Zigzag,
or the Zany Blaney,
sub-trunk.
But everybody bought one.
Mm-hmm. I had one.
Yeah, well, I bought a trick... And it soon become obsolete. I bought it from Abbott.
What
cutting
was that?
A woman in six parts, remember?
I do remember that.
And I bought it
not
for...
the mismade, but it was
six quite
parts, yeah.
And I didn't like it. It didn't have a punch to it.
Mm-hmm.
And Abbott was cheap. You know, back then you could buy an illusion for $150. I bought Temple of Benares, and I did that for 8 months in a review.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty good trick.
Here in
nowadays,
Las
Vegas. You couldn't do it. I'd use it as a production.
Yeah.
Roll it out, show it empty, throw the swords out, and produce a girl.
Yeah, it needs to be fast.
Yeah.
People are
the
just
not... The attention
not...
span has never been worse,
right.
thanks to the little clicker.
That's true.
Yeah.
Everybody wants immediate gratification,
so they
that's
want
for sure.
Action. I don't do anything over 3 minutes. The rings,
mm-hmm.
The zombie. But I've seen people get involved with the rings. They're going to show you every move they learn and do a 10-minute routine. No, not today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they want speed and action.
Yeah.
Houdini would have been in trouble. He used to spend an hour in a cabinet getting out of handcuffs.
Well, and people would just be standing in the audience looking at this curtain for an hour.
He would have died today.
He's back there reading the newspaper,
But I read Houdini's life story when I was about 14, mm-hmm. and I had a hero. The guy was an athlete, so I took up I took up handball and swimming. I said, what is handball?
Yeah.
And great sport.
Mm-hmm.
And too bad you can't see the little ball on TV, because it would be a sensation. It would put tennis out of business.
Well, that was one of the issues with hockey. You know, that hockey, the puck moves so fast that you can't keep your eye on that, certainly. And I've seen some games nowadays that they will use some CGI or something so that it looks like it's lit or looks like a piece of lightning when it moves around or something, so you can kind of keep your eye on the puck instead of all you can really watch are just the players, you know.
Right.
Same thing with handball. The thing is moving fast and it's just about a 2-inch ball.
It's the perfect ball sports. Mm-hmm. Like swimming, you use every muscle in your body. Mm-hmm. Both sides. The other sports you use a racket. All the blood is forced to one side of the body.
That's a good point. Yeah, I played racquetball for
but
years.
But see, my background was juggling. So when I took up handball, I won the title in 12 months. Mm-hmm. And I had good footwork. I was a fencer. I used to teach fencing. And I had a judo background. I knew how to absorb the wall. Most people have to slow down when they hit a wall. I absorbed it. So within my teacher said, I said, I never saw anybody pick this game up so quick. Uh-huh. But there was no money in it. I should have taken up golf. I did play golf for 5 years before I lost my first ball. And then one day the string broke. But the fastest growing sport today, ultimate fighting. A 4-ounce glove, use every muscle in your body, and there's a purpose. You learn judo and wrestling and boxing. You have a way to protect yourself. Putting a ball through a hoop don't make sense. Mm-hmm. If you're 7 foot tall, you call the dunk a sport.
It's easy to do.
And football, I have nothing to do with football because I'm Jewish and I can't touch a pigskin.
Okay.
No, I'm actually Scotch-Irish English, but I traced my tree all the way down. And you know what I turned out to be? A sap.
But
this ultimate fight has put boxing out of business.
Yeah. Now, you were a weightlifter, too, because the picture I see over here.
Well, that was the secret. When I took up sport, I told my coach, I'm going to do some weightlifting, put on 20 pounds of muscle. And he said, if you do, Gary, you'll never be a good athlete. Mm-hmm. I said, I think you're wrong. So I put on 20 pounds, and I won the Sullivan Award in 1960. All the swimming events. And all the handball events.
Yeah.
I should have been out playing golf, but I didn't have the money. Uh-huh. Lessons and the clubs. Handball, you need a ball and a wall, you know.
That's right.
It's a poor man's sport.
Yeah.
Because if I did have any money, I'd send it off to Abbott's Magic Company.
And get to buy a new magic trick.
And I literally bought the catalog out, and they were so proud of me, I reached the Lido with Abbott equipment. I couldn't buy Thayer. Our own brothers.
Yeah, too expensive.
I could buy a square circle from Abbott for $10.
Now, what were they paying on the strip back then?
They paid me $550 a week.
A week, okay.
I think the agent was making most of the money, see? And
so that was your net. I mean, whoever got whatever on top of that. And so, and how many shows would you work a week?
Two a night. And I thought, well, this is nice. They wanted 7 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's better than putting an 8-hour shift in something doing you don't like.
Yeah.
There's only one way to avoid work. Do what you would do for free and make money at it.
Well, that's good advice.
Yeah. Although most people prostitute themselves all their life. They do something they really don't like. Mm-hmm. I know I've done it. I was a gardener and worked warehouse and bellhop. These jobs I didn't like.
Sure.
But I didn't come from a rich background. Mm-hmm. And then what little money I did make, I sent it off to Robin's Magic Company. Remember that in New York?
Sure, of course, yeah.
It's still around.
Yeah.
I hear the owner died. Mm-hmm. Oh, I bought the catalog. God, I was only a young teenager. But by buying everything, I became rather educated. I knew how everything worked. I wanted the secret to everything. Mm-hmm. And you know what I did? I kept that stuff. Most people dump it, trade it, get rid of it.
And that's what you got surrounding
us here.
And
now these little $10 tricks are worth $100, $200.
Yeah.
So I probably spent in my lifetime about $200,000 or $300,000. And now this little collection, which you haven't seen, is worth $3 million.
Holy moly.
Wow. But if I'd have put my money in comics, it'd be worth $10 million. If I'd have bought a little land on the strip, I'd be a billionaire.
Yeah, yeah.
But money's not everything.
But happy where you are.
Yeah, money's not everything. But it does keep in touch with your kids. You got any kids?
I have 2 boys and 4 granddaughters.
Yeah, well, that's good. Well, the only reason I got all this stuff, I never had any kids, because you got a hereditary factor. Mm-hmm. I looked like Orson Welles that was run over by a truck, and I don't want to duplicate myself. If it looked like my wife, fine. Yeah. But
you were never married?
I've never tried marriage. Okay. I have a philosophy on marriage. As much as I like pizza, I don't want it every day. And I like girls too much to hang out with one of them.
Okay.
Now, if I could be a member of the Mormon church and have 6 wives and one day of rest, that'd be good. But they made it illegal.
Yeah.
But the divorce rate is now 70%. So something is wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
You know who invented marriage?
Who was that?
The king. He was going broke paying for all the bastards. And he said, we got to do something about that. Let's invent marriage. Well, it never worked. Because they kill each other. Whenever there's a murder, either the husband or the wife kill each other. I watch these FBI shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they do hang together, they just hang together. I would say maybe 5% stay in love all their life. And then when one dies, the other one dies soon after that.
Shortly after. That's very true. Yeah. Sometimes 6 months or a year or whatever.
Yeah.
My wife and I have been married for 43 years. She's my best friend. And it's,
you're doing
I love her.
Something right.
Yeah.
You're following the three rules of marriage. Because all my friends call me, Gary, I just got a divorce. I said, you didn't follow the three rules. What's that? Well, rule number one, they need recognition.
Yeah.
Every day you say, I love your shoes. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they go out and buy another pair. They got 100 pair already stuck. And I love your hairdo, and I love this. And so they need recognition. So do you.
Yeah, sure.
They need stimuli. Don't bore them to death. Today, you know, we've got a new sex position, or I'm going to take you out or get them a bouquet. But you must have stimuli.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people divorce because they're bored to death.
Yeah.
But the important thing is security. They need, if you can make more money than they can spend, that'll keep them for a while.
Yeah.
But they want to make sure you're not out cheating. They
sure.
need security, and so do you.
True.
So if you follow the three rules, which you apparently have been doing mm-hmm. to hang in there for 40-some years,
yeah.
but they say, well, gee, Gary, if I'd have known that, I'd still be married. But that's the secret. I did a lot of research on marriage.
Yeah.
I read a 200-page book called The Stress of Marriage. And I don't need the stress. I watch all my friends, and they go through it, and I can't believe it.
And you live a stress-free life, pretty much.
Yeah,
because
right
you're, again, doing what you love
I've
to do.
I've had more spare time than anybody.
Uh-huh.
I never left home, because I had so much junk, I'd have to move into a warehouse.
Yeah.
So I got along with Mom and Dad.
Yeah.
And when I graduated, it was agreed that I'd give them room and board.
Right.
And, you know, they took good care of me. They fed me and clothed me and bought me a bicycle. But mm-hmm. if I wanted magic, I had to go out and make my money. So I mowed lawns, and I was always working, doing something.
Yeah.
Had more Finally, Mom got a little irritated because I was suffocating her. I was taking every room, and she could barely... The dust, you know, finally accumulates. She was a neat freak. Well, you can't be with 100,000 props, 10,000 books, and you've seen the warehouse area.
Yeah.
And you've seen the living room. Can you imagine? Well, Mom died 12 years ago, so mm-hmm. I just took her bedroom over.
Yeah.
And my brother died, I took his bedroom. My father died, I took his bed. Then Dad had a place where he worked in the back, big room. He was a draftsman. So I took that room. So the 12 rooms are just, as you can see, you can barely walk into it.
Yeah.
When I was in the hospital, Lance took it all outdoors, put in a new rug and a new couch. And he made rooms I get around in my wheelchair.
Right, right.
So that was nice of him. He brought his crew out here.
Yeah, Lance Burton did that for you because he's been like a son to
you. Well,
you
know,
everything, so.
I told Mom, I'm going to make out a will and give it all to Lance. And she says, you did the right thing. Because mm-hmm. Mom didn't like magician.
But she did like Lance.
She liked Lance.
Yeah.
And Lance don't have an enemy in the world. He's ethical.
Yes.
The other magicians steal from each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know how ethical Lance is? He called Blackstone Jr. He says, can I have kids come up and put their hands on the cage?
Mm-hmm.
Which was the old man's idea.
Right, right.
And Junior said, sure. And Lance made a masterpiece out of the vanishing cage.
Yes.
And he was truly the greatest magician in our time because he had great skill.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a lot of strength on stage.
Yeah.
A lot of magicians are so skinny they have no strength. Doug Henning used to skip around.
Yeah.
And Lance had good sense of humor. And Lance had power. And... Lance had all the elements. He was a throwback because he'd do a lot of the classics, the Miser's Dream, and these tricks require skill.
Right.
And he was the only great magician that won the FISM. The other magicians are afraid to get in it because they'd probably come in second.
Yeah.
And he's just a nice kid, never changed, money never affected him.
Right.
And I don't know if he's ever going to marry, but it don't matter.
Yeah, with all the stuff that you got here, I mean, there's no sense in trying to get rid of this or sell it off piecemeal at a time. As you said, you know, that he's got a place for it, and he would, I'm sure, would be a good caretaker or curator for that.
And you know, of all the magicians, he'd come over about once a month and borrow a lot of books and read them.
Yeah.
The other guys didn't do that. I guess they thought they knew it all. Lance was a great student.
Yeah.
And he's got a great memory. So we talk history indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
And... So he's just a nice guy to know.
Well, as we start to wrap up over here, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast, and you've had...
I don't know what a pot is.
Okay, well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. So I know this the is your first one.
The average flower pot, I know.
And so I always like to close to find out what people's magic word is. I don't mean like abracadabra or hocus pocus. In other words, what's your philosophy?
Hocus pocus and videocus.
You had said earlier something about joy and spreading joy to your audience.
Yeah, so that's that could my be your philosophy.
So restate that again. What would be your...
Well, the greatest joy in life is to give other people joy.
Yeah.
Make them laugh, show them some beautiful artwork, sing a song for them, or play an instrument. Just give people joy during your life. I don't want to scare people with religion. Well, if you don't do it, you're going to hell. Yeah. That's not joy.
Yeah.
So just make them happy.
Make people happy.
And you should live your life in such a way that when you die, even the undertaker's sad. Because I'm looking forward to death. That must be wonderful. Nobody seems to come back to complain.
No. Even Houdini. That's right. All right. Thank you very much. And so, for the magic word, and here from the museum. What do you call the museum, by the way? Is it, do you have a special name?
Darwin's Magic Museum. I'm from the Houdini School.
Okay.
Get your name in front of it and your picture on the front page. Because when he died, he had the record of a scrapbook. And his name is still the biggest.
Yeah.
So he's always been my hero. He was into everything. What a dynamic energy, Houdini.
Yes. Wait, really?
Yeah, I tried to.
And Houdini. So do you.
Well,
you have a dynamic personality.
What can I do that Houdini never did? I did the first underwater straitjacket escape.
Huh.
Chained to an anchor underwater.
Yeah.
Almost got killed a few times, and people come backstage, and they congratulate me on the billiard balls after I got all sweaty getting out of a straitjacket. So I was never a heavy showman.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the way we Gentiles are. But Houdini could tear the theater down doing the old needle trick.
Mm-hmm.
He was a big-time showman.
Yeah, yeah.
He exposed all these phony things. I made an album. I exposed everybody.
Yeah.
Because I'm a little skeptical about everything.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. So, again, for the Magic Word Podcast, as you can tell, we could go on for several more hours talking about that. That was Gary Darwin, and this is Scotty out. I want to thank Gary Darwin for being my guest today on the podcast. And yes, now, Gary, you know what a podcast is because you were on one. And also, thanks for opening your house and allowing me to take a tour through the collection that you have there. And I want to apologize to the listeners for my coughing spells that I had during the podcast. I must have been allergic to some of the dust, I think, that we might have stirred up during the little video tour that I took. And speaking of that video, that if you go to the podcast website, that is themagicwordpodcast.com, you will see there where I have posted a video of that tour of his collection taken there in his home. So anyhow, I want to thank you, and I also again want to thank the friends of the Magic Word who have helped make this Las Vegas Chronicles possible, and I also want to welcome a few of the newest members who have joined the Friends of the Magic Word, and they include Jonathan Hsu, Gino Minari, Phil Ackerley, and James Wade. Thank you guys very much for your financial contributions and helping to make the Magic Word what it is today and what it's going to grow to be in the future, because I have recently purchased some new audio equipment, and so hopefully that will make the quality of this podcast even better. You know, I like what Stan Allen said a few weeks ago in the podcast when he said his Magic Word was better, and that's what I want to try to do also, is try to make each and every one a little bit better. And it's thanks to you and to your help that and for you listeners that have such high demands in order to try to make this better. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and try to spread joy in other people's lives. Just make them happy. This is Scotty out.